ever by my side.
Hey, you're listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sign Point, Alaska.
It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm your host, Martha Rosenstein. Imagine running 460 miles of trails through the remote wilderness of Oregon in just 7 days. That's exactly what Emily Hallman did, setting a fastest known time on the Oregon section of the Pacific Crest Trail in 2020. But for Emily, this achievement was about more than just speed or endurance. It was a journey through grief and a tribute to her late mother. Today, Emily joins us to share about this record-breaking run and the book she wrote about it. We explore the healing power of movement in nature, the physical demands, and the emotional strength it took to honor her mother's memory in this way, and so much more. Stay tuned for more on Outdoor Explorer.
Hi, this is Lori Townsend, news director and host of Talk of Alaska. You're listening to Alaska Public Media on KSKA Anchorage.
Our diverse city is filled with creatives doing amazing things. But even as a resident, you can only scratch the surface of what Anchorage has to offer. Tune in to Alaska Public Media for State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. Join me, Ammon Swenson, as I interview local artists, play homegrown music, and tell you about upcoming events. That's State of Art, Fridays at 8 p.m. on Alaska Public Media, FM 91.1. Or tell your smart speaker to play KSKA.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Martha Rosenstein, and I'm speaking with Emily Hallman. Emily is a writer, trail runner, and mountain athlete from Eugene, Oregon. She's a top 10 finisher at the Hard Rock 100 and set the FKT on the Oregon section of the Pacific Crest Trail, an endeavor that she undertook as a way of honoring her mother, whom she lost to uterine cancer. Her book, To the Gorge, chronicles this physical feat alongside her attempt to navigate her grief over the loss of her mother. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer, Emily.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
First, can you just tell us a little bit more about you? Who is Emily and why does she love to run?
Sure. This is like such a hard question.
Always. I know.
Like the easiest question to answer, and it never is.
No.
I mean, I think your introduction captured a lot of how I describe myself. I'm a huge fan of the outdoors and like to move my body through it in many different ways, including running mostly on trails and backcountry skiing and backpacking and just and largely with my dog, Dilly, my best friend, Dilly Picklechip.
Amazing.
Yes. And I'm also a writer, and a lot of my writing does explore the intersection of the outdoors and the human experience. So it often uses outdoor and outdoor adventure to get into feelings and the things that we all go through as humans. And I'm a big fan of snacks, very comfortable in the chip aisle of any food dealer.
As reflected by your dog's name.
It's true. As reflected by my dog's name. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It captures my deep love of snacks.
Yeah. How did you get into running and all things outdoors?
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Vermont, in rural Vermont, and I grew up on a chunk of land. My parents had like maybe 60 to 80 acres. Most of it was forested. So I think loving the outdoors was just part of how I grew up in this world of like running around, turning boulders into pirate ships, and just having that freedom as a kid to fall in love with it and let my imagination run wild and my body run wild. And then I got into running. You mentioned that I did this run for my mom, and my mom is every reason that I'm a runner. She started running when she was in her late 40s. She went through a health scare and had to get her gallbladder out and totally changed her relationship with physical activity after that. And it started with just walking, and then she started race walking, and then she started running and did 5Ks and 10Ks, half marathons. And the year she turned 50, she ran her first full marathon, and I watched her do that. And I was a teenager at the time, and just felt wildly inspired watching my 50-year-old mom run a 26.2 miles around Burlington, Vermont. And so I decided to try one myself. And I did that a few years later. And my mom did it with me. And she didn't do it with me. She beat me by 20 minutes. But it totally hooked me on running, and I started doing more and more marathons. And then I moved to Oregon about 11 years ago now from the East Coast. And at the time, I really was into running. I was living in Washington, D.C., so the outdoors was a little bit less accessible when I was there. But once I was in Oregon, I totally plunged into the world of trail running and never looked back, because I think once you're running in places like the Cascades and the forests and mountains around the Pacific Northwest, it's hard to get excited about running on asphalt ever again. And so that's how I became a runner. And then especially moving to a place that has such stunning and wonderful outdoors just hooked me on the sport of trail running.
I often think that it's interesting, the like dichotomy between road runners and trail runners is really fascinating. I mean, I think most of us started running on roads, right?
Like, probably,
that,
yeah.
That's just how you do it. And then there's this like subset of people that go to trail and never look back. And the people who have not found that yet, or who have no intention of finding that, think that we're all crazy.
Totally. And when I first started trail running, I did still live on the East Coast in DC. And I went through this big culture shock from road running to trail running. And there was a lot that like was very scary and I feel when I was a road runner, I feel like I was such a road runner, and I was a triathlete too. So I was just like very sucked into the, you know, that way of life. And then I did my first 50K. And like, I got to an aid station and they took my water bottle to refill it. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you taking my water bottle from me? There's no time for this. And it confused me that there was this different culture and way of doing things. And now I love that. I'm all in on the take my water bottle, fill it with Coke and whatever. But yeah, they're two different things for sure.
Yeah, I feel like there's much, even though people are still running fast and you still are, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to win, but people are trying to win and beat other people. there's just like less of a sense of urgency when you're doing trail running, because you just have to slow down. That's just not possible to move quite as quickly. I think that's definitely one of the things I love about it.
The same.
So you set a fastest known time on the Oregon section of the Pacific Crest Trail, which is an incredible accomplishment. So obviously you're not a stranger to doing hard physical things, but I don't think that either attempting an FKT nor running the 460 miles of the PCT is something that's done without preparation and planning. So what was the process leading up to that like, and what sort of planning and training went into that effort?
So much.
Yeah.
I'm not a planner. I can prepare like physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. Like that side of it is something I was very familiar with. I had been running ultra distance trail races for I think 7 years before I decided to take on this FKT, which was about a 460 mile section of the Pacific Crest Trail. And so the idea of that was still overwhelming to think about.
Right.
That was so much bigger than anything I'd ever done. But the logistical element of it is very outside of who I am as a person, but you have to like prepare as much as you possibly can for something like that. I had like lists and spreadsheets, and I did lots of mapping and lots of like plans A through Z. And right before my effort, I shared a spreadsheet with one of my friends who was helping me out. And she just was like, my eyes, I have to change this. This is not how spreadsheets are supposed to look. So I wouldn't say that I like nailed the planning of it, if you're someone who really loves planning. But I think I was well prepared as I could be going into it. And I had help too. My partner Ian loves doing logistical things. And so he helped me a lot. And so we basically I wanted to do this 460 mile run across the state of Oregon on the Pacific Crest Trail. And we tried to figure out and I was trying to set the record. So I knew what the existing record was. There are all these tiers of FKTs. There's supported and self-supported and men's and women's. And so I knew the different records that I was trying to go after, and then kind of went from there of like, well, if I'm trying to beat this record, what is the amount of time that I need to finish this in? And then kind of like, what does that mean for each day? Like, what is my mileage? And truthfully, when I was planning this all out, it felt like I was playing with Monopoly money, because, you know, I had run 100 milers before, but to run 460 miles, the overall FKT when I was going for it was like 7 days and 23 hours. It was under 8 days. But that breaks down to about 60 miles a day. And like to do that for basically 8 days straight. And that was something that like 1,000,000% had never done. So I was just kind of like as I'm making these spreadsheets, like, sure, I will do 60 miles this day and 72 miles the next day. Like, sure, Emily can do that. But I didn't really know. But that was part of the idea of it, was to do something that felt a little uncertain and that felt very challenging and that would push me to my limits. And so when I was planning it, it was like, yep, check, check, check. This is going to do all of those things. This feels uncertain. And then just trying to, you know, like anyone who loves doing especially big things in the outdoors knows, trying to plan for all the different scenarios of what could happen. And obviously you can only control so much. And so you getting ready to control what you can, bringing all the different gear and food and being ready to, I mean, that's, I think, one of the big keys to doing something like this in a successful way is being ready to adapt and being prepared to deal with whatever the trail throws at you. So we tried to do, my partner had a van. And when I say van, you probably picture like this shiny, nice Sprinter van, but it was this like janky salvage vehicle he got off Craigslist for $2,000. And it was heavily branded with its former occupant, which was the Friendsview Retirement Community.
Perfect.
It was so perfect. It had a mismatched door, but it had a lot of space. And so we had just like bins upon bins of stuff in this van and a place for me to sleep. And and then physically, I trained for it. And honestly, my training didn't look that different from how I would get ready for like a 100 miler. I think I'd been running for long enough that I had some awareness of what my sweet spot is for a volume that's pushing me to get to be my strongest, but isn't going to break me. I mean, I've certainly learned, as I'm sure many people who have done long distance trail runs have, that that more is not always the key to success, and that even when you're escalating your distance by a ton, it doesn't mean that you escalate your training to the same degree. And so I did a lot of just what felt like a good volume for me. And then I did a lot of silly things that felt like they were pushing me to keep going when that's not necessarily the most appealing option. And like mentally, like just like I would sometimes like drive a couple hours to go for a run in the mountains and then drive home. And you know, you're all tired from like, it's a long drive, and then like do it again the next day, or like things that just like felt like you're kind of like going. To get ready, yeah, as ready as I could for doing that on the trail.
Yeah, I think you have to probably get kind of creative with that, because there's no way to simulate what it's like to run 60 miles a day for 8 days in a row other than actually doing it. But that's not feasible or advisable.
No, it's not. Exactly. So yeah, I mean, I would play little mental tricks. Like I basically never ended a run when I said that I would, even if that just meant running like an extra 3 blocks or something, like always like hardening my mental muscle of like running past when I thought I would be done. And mm-hmm. just like silly things like that were part of how I got ready.
I think that's a great approach. You talked a little bit about mental, like the mental component of that. And I actually think that one of the things that I like best about endurance sports is that obviously there's a huge physical component, but the mental component is so different than all of the other sports out there. Like mental toughness is important, but also it's the difference often between running, you know, 30 plus miles, 100 plus miles and not finishing, is that you have to be really good at problem solving on the fly. And like whoever is best at it that day is the person that either wins or finishes. So how did you, other than, you know, just kind of like tricking yourself into not being done when you thought you were going to be done, how did you prepare to handle those moments when things weren't going as planned, or when you had to problem solve and you were like, I just can't, I'm too tired to problem solve?
I mean, I looked at this effort really as, you know, a lot of times when we're training for a goal race or something, we're thinking like right now, it's like the beginning of the year, everyone's thinking like, what am I doing next year? When do I start training? And you look at it as this, like, I'm training for this race in the next set a number of months. And I really looked at this effort as like, this isn't about the training that I'm doing in the months leading up to it. It's the years that I've spent like in long distance running and ultra running, like just doing stuff in the outdoors that have taught me how to adapt and problem solve. And it really felt this, like it was like building on this multi-year foundation that I don't think I would have been successful without that foundation. And so I think it was less about how I got ready to problem solve in the months leading up to it, and more about the fact that I have been putting myself out there doing this stuff for years and have learned how to problem solve and adapt and how to, you know, not freak out when something happens and how to like figure it out. And because I think also just being prepared for that, like, which I think is something I've tried to do since my first 100 mile or first ultra, whatever, is like not going into it thinking like, this is going to be rainbows and puppies. And like, even though I'm excited about it and want to do this, like knowing like this is going to get hard, things are going to go wrong, and having like a little, like not just a preparedness for that, but also like an excitement and eagerness to like, to test yourself and to see what you can do. And when something happens, be like, all right, here we go. Like, I'm ready for this.
I think your point about that you've been putting yourself out, you know, doing things in the outdoors, and that has all of those years of just doing the things has prepared you for that. I think that's a really great point, because I think people who maybe are not as experienced in the outdoors who are interested in like doing more things outside, more hiking, more running, I feel like they think, oh, look at all these people that have it all together. They just know how to do that inherently, but it's really a skill that you practice, and you practice every day that you go outside. Really, you practice it every day, but you practice it every time you go outside, and that's, you just get better and better at it.
Yeah. And it's really fun to look back at, like, I remember when I moved to Oregon, like it was a really big deal to me personally to go for a run by myself on our local town trails in Eugene, Oregon, like before sunrise. Like that was like, I am a hero. Like I am, you know. And then like to go on like my first, like, I had to teach myself like navigational skills when I moved to Oregon in order, and like just how to like be safe and alone outside. And like, I remember when I went for my first run by myself, which looking back, it was not anything very big or tricky, but I felt so proud of myself for doing it. And like to think about like that woman is the same one who then went on to like run across Oregon and do it faster than anyone else. And like it, but it, you know, it's fun to look back and be like, look how far I've come, and remember like that if you're just getting going, that you can go from like it being a big deal to go for your first trail run ever to then like, you know, seeing where you can go as you keep building on what you can do and getting more and more confident and building your skill set.
Yeah. And I feel like you sort of develop this, it's like a slow development of confidence. Cause I mean, I have the same thing, right? I have lived in Alaska my whole life, and I'm very comfortable here, but going for a hike by myself was not necessarily something that I was like, oh, I'm really excited to do this. Doing it with other people, doing, you know, smaller hikes where I know I'm going to see other people on the trail, and then like getting into, you know, longer efforts where I may not see anybody and I'm more on my own. That's, you just build up that tolerance and that confidence as you do it. Yeah. Do you have a favorite memory or moment from your run across Oregon?
Oh, so many.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. It's so hard to pick a favorite. That was, I mean, there were both like, and some of my favorite memories, I feel like were from terrible times on the channel. But I, you know, I went through all kinds of emotions and stuff. I'm trying to think of like, I will say that the Oregon PCT is, it tours like some of the most stunning parts of the state of Oregon. And Oregon is, like I said, where I became a trail runner. And so getting to take this tour of all of these special places in this way, like through this run that I was doing to celebrate my mom, it all felt very special. And there was lots of like, good times and good trail moments along the way.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm Martha Rosenstein, and I'm speaking with Emily Halnan, an endurance athlete and author who recently wrote a book about grieving the loss of her mother through an epic adventure in trail running. How do you translate resilience in the face of physical challenges into like this emotional strength, right? Because so much of being an endurance runner, so much of being a human, like this is, we often undertake physical challenges as a way of coping with, you know, hardship or whatever, you know, going on a journey. How do you translate that physical resilience into emotional strength?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a really cool thing about electing to do these hard things outside is they do teach us that we're capable of a lot more than we think we are, and they teach us how strong we are. I mean, that's one of the reasons I got so hooked on running, is I felt like it kept showing me that, and it's like, it's not like you, that first marathon I did, I realized I was stronger than I thought I was, but I wasn't like, and now that's the end of the story. It also like leaves you hungry to like keep exploring that question of like, just what am I capable of and just how strong am I? And I think like that really does translate. And I do think it's important to differentiate that like the physical challenges that we're doing outside are voluntary and we're very right. privileged to get to choose to like yes. go and put ourselves through this suffer fest in the outdoors. And obviously going through something like big loss is not a voluntary thing. But I do think that I felt like some of like it really, you really internalize that those lessons as you're going through the things that like the outdoor runs and all of that, that show you how strong you are. And I do think that helps you feel like you can get through other things that seem impossible to get through. Certainly when I was going through grief and it felt impossible to believe that I could ever like be happy again, smile again, laugh again, feel like the world was the place I wanted to be. And it's not like I sat there and was like, but you finished a 100 miler, Emily. So, you know, you're capable of getting through this. But I do think that it is like this, you know, whisper of encouragement in the background of those times that like help you understand that, that humans are capable of getting through more than makes sense, and that putting one foot in front of the other and continuing to move forward through the seemingly impossible. I will say I found when I wrote this book that you mentioned, To the Gorge, which is about my run across Oregon and also losing my mom and going through the grief of losing her, I found it was extremely natural to write about these parallel journeys of doing the hardest run that I'd ever been on and going through the hardest emotional experience I'd ever been through. And again, there was that really important difference of like one being this voluntary thing we're doing like for fun. And then this other, not at all, that, but that there's so many shared threads of how we get through each one of like the things that help us keep moving, the true truths and realities that exist in both of these hard things. And they're really, there really are a lot of beautiful shared threads between hard emotional experiences and then these hard physical experiences that we put ourselves through.
Yeah. Just when you were talking about that, two things that came to mind were sort of the idea of like 1 mile at a time, right? You just take it one, mm-hmm. one little thing at a time, and that is how you get through it. And also the idea of training for them where like, you know, you have been through, in theory, the hardest emotional thing, right? So the next time that mm-hmm. you encounter that, the hardest or almost the hardest emotional thing, you know that you can actually navigate through that and how that just, it's like it's a practice. And it seems like something that is counterintuitive to practice, but it is kind of a practice. And the first time you go through it, you're like, oh my gosh, what the heck is happening to me? And every other time it's sort of like, okay, like this is familiar territory. I understand how this is going to work and I will work through it.
Yeah. And I think it's just like that deep understanding of like, that things will get better with time yep. and that like knowing, having felt that. And then, and in my book, I do write about a couple of other yep. losses that I went through after losing my mom. And I do think that is a really helpful thing to be able to feel as you're going through these things that just like push you into the darkest black hole, to remember that like, okay, I've been here before and like, I found light again. I found joy, like, and I know that like, this will, even though it feels, again, impossible to believe in this moment, I know that like this does exist and that like, yeah, you keep putting one foot in front of the other and you start to feel that again.
Yeah. So many people spend time outside for the physical benefits. And we've kind of like alluded to the fact that there are obviously mental benefits and it can be a really helpful tool for mental things. I read a study actually several years ago now that was talking about the benefits of nature on our mental health. They did a study mm-hmm. where they had two groups of people walking for 90 minutes. One was in a park where it was nice and quiet, and one was in next to a busy road. And they found the physical benefits were essentially the same, but the psychological benefits were very different. Whereas the group who walked quietly in the quiet park had actually a decreased amount of activity in the portion of their brain that's active during rumination, which is like that repetitive focus on negative emotions, which I thought was really interesting that those people who are truly like in nature, it actually, there was a tangible improvement in their emotional state, because that's very hard to measure. You've already kind of touched on this a little bit. Your book obviously dives into the intersection of running and grief, but can you just talk a little bit more about that process of being in nature and how that was kind of critical to your grieving process?
Yeah, I could do an entire podcast on this, I think. But just like you talk about that study and that anyone who's been in nature, that just makes so much sense and clicks, right? And I think about, like, I live in Eugene, Oregon. We're in the Willamette Valley. We're not like in the mountains, but we have this great backyard trail network where I can like get on into a forest like a mile from my house. And so I normally like run on pavement and on roads until I get to this forested trail. And I can just feel this like switch flip every time that I go from the pavement lead up to the forest, where like it's like this soothing of my nervous system. And like, especially like if I am having a stressful day, it just feels like there's this like deep breath that happens when I step into the woods. And that's just like a thing that I feel when I'm in nature. I think for grief specifically, and for going through the loss of my mom, at the time I was working in I was working at the University of Oregon and had a very standard like office job. And among other places, felt the ways that I was not supposed to be openly expressing or communicating about my grief. Like I spent a lot of time like at that job running to the bathroom or like biting my lip in a meeting or like doing anything like through my mom's entire sickness and then death of like trying to just stuff all of my grief inside and not let anyone see it. And even outside of work, like even in friend groups, it felt like there was like an expiration date on like, how long can I be the sad girl? Like my mom was sick for 13 months. And then obviously she passed away almost 5 years ago now, but you know, grief is not something that ever really goes away and continues to be something that I feel in very big ways frequently. But if you feel like you're like, we live in this society that, you know, you get like a few days of bereavement leave, like you wear black to a funeral. Like there's just so few places where we're like actually encouraged or not even encouraged, but just like allowed to feel grief. But then like, if you go to like the PCT in the summer and you meet a thru-hiker and you ask them how they're doing, they're probably going to give you a really honest answer. Like even if they're having like a really bad day, they just got lost. Like, and same with like a trail run. If you go watch a 100 miler, like you're going to see people who are like just openly feeling what they're feeling and not hiding it. And I feel like from like, again, from years of like just spending time in the outdoors and participating in these events where there is this like more emotional honesty allowed, I felt like the outdoors was a place where I didn't have to like stuff away my grief. And it was somewhere that I could actually like feel the feelings I so desperately needed to feel. And so for me, I think it was just like this critical thing, especially in that rawest portion of grief where I could go on a run and that wasn't a conscious thing at the time. It's like something I've reflected on looking back and appreciated that it was this really sacred space where in a rare space and a much needed space in our society where I felt like I was allowed to have and feel and express the feelings that I needed to, and that I didn't need to like stuff them into the deepest corner of me so no one could see them. I think that's a really beautiful thing about the outdoors and our relationship with the outdoors and a lot of different forms of recreation's relationship with the outdoors, where there is this like greater emotional honesty and like greater space for people to share their hard feelings.
Well, and one of the things that's interesting to me, and I learned this when I did my first 50K, one of my goals was to finish and the other one was to not cry. And I didn't actually realize that not crying was going to be harder than finishing because of that sort of, you lose some of that emotional regulation when you get so tired. And I think in a situation where you're processing something outside of, you know, your immediate goal or intent, that becomes helpful in some ways.
Totally. Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And that's probably why no one is trying to hide their feelings in a 100 miler because maybe they've lost their ability to hide their feelings in a 100 miler.
Right.
And it's like, and that, yeah, I think that that's a very true thing. But we also like, we don't just allow it. We like hold space and encourage it. And like, you know, whether it's volunteers or pacers or crew are just like watching each other have these really raw emotions and being like, you're okay. Like, yeah, keep going.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm Martha Rosenstein, and I'm speaking with Emily Halnan, an endurance athlete and author. We are going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to Alaska Public Media on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1, connecting Alaskans, life informed.
On the next Alaska News Nightly, two Alaskans recall the time they went birdwatching with former President Jimmy Carter.
You're generally trying to be very, very quiet. But here's a man that we didn't want to be quiet with. We wanted to hear his story.
That's on Alaska News Nightly, weeknights at 6 p.m. on FM 91.1. Wherever you listen to podcasts or check out alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Martha Rosenstein, and I'm speaking with Emily Halnan, an endurance athlete and author who recently wrote a book about grieving the loss of her mother through an epic adventure in trail running.
Do you think that your that mental toughness that you have from being, you've kind of already touched on this, but that mental toughness that you have from being an athlete, do you think that that helped you in this process of navigating your grief? Or do you feel like it maybe hindered you because you have that, like, I'm just going to muscle through this sort of ability?
I think I'm like a woman who feels my feelings. I'm a sensitive emotional person. So yeah. I'm not someone who tends to be like, I'm just going to power through this and be fine. I think like whether I want to or not, I'm going to like feel deeply. I think probably like we talked about that having elected to do so many hard things for so many years probably gave me some encouragement and support with navigating grief. Yeah.
So for the outdoors, I feel like for me is a place where like I can be alone with my thoughts, but mm-hmm. it's also a place where I connect with people and a community that, and it reminds me, you know, that I'm part of a community. Have you had any challenges around balancing that desire to be alone in the woods and that, you know, need to connect with others in nature?
I mean, I feel like I'm like you, like I appreciate both elements of it. And yeah. I feel like at times I do want like just alone time in the outdoors, or I swear I want alone time. I usually want dilly time in the outdoors. And
that having a dog with you is the equivalent. I mean, it's not the equivalent of being alone, but I am alone even when I'm with my dog.
Right. Yeah. So me and Dilly in the outdoors. And then it is also very important to me, and I think it was hugely helpful through grief to feel plugged into a community and to connect with other humans. And I think the outdoors and trail running are both spaces where I have found very beautiful communities that I love to plug into. So I think I need both, and I wouldn't say that I have trouble balancing both. I think that I like it organically works out in a pretty good way, or if I need alone time, I can take alone time. And if I need community, then I'm reaching out to some trail running girlfriends or something to get that. But
yeah,
both are important.
Definitely. How did you mentioned that your partner helped you, you know, with the logistics and carry out this 460 mile FKT. How did others in your community or your running community, how did they play a role in this whole process?
It played a huge role. So like I mentioned earlier, there are different ways, different categorizations of FKTs, which include unsupported and then self-supported and then supported. And I would even say that mine was like another category of like super supported, maybe. And I was very spoiled with support for it. I think people, so I did this in August 2020. So it was in the year of the pandemic. And it was at a time when, you know, it was like, I definitely had to be like, am I going to do this run or am I not going to do this run? And trained like I would be able to, but had some uncertainty there. But it was especially, I think it was a time when the spending time outdoors was recognized as like, this is a safer space to be in, but we had to do weird things like not carpool or whatever, like,
right.
But I think because it was during the pandemic, especially like people were so hungry for like positive things to plug into, and there had been fewer opportunities. So there was that. And then obviously like the loss of my mom and what my mom meant to me and who my mom was, people recognized how important this run was for me to celebrate her. And a lot of my friends had met my mom and also loved her and like were inspired by her. We haven't talked a lot about my mom besides her like being part of my running story, but my mom was this incredible woman who inspired a lot of people. And then also like the idea of this run of like trying to run 460 miles across the Oregon PCT and trying to go for the overall record. They're just, people got very excited. And so it was, my local friends all were very eager to support me. And I had a lot of support both in training and then in the run itself, in the all kinds of forms of, I had people who shared miles with me on the trail. I had people who showed up with different forms of trail magic where they were surprising me with like, but I think my favorite trail magic surprise was my friends were smart enough to freeze a Powerade the night before they hiked in to surprise me. And I was like several miles from a road intersection. It was August. It was this super hot day. And like the kind of day where like you would maybe trade like an organ for something cold. And then my friends were just there on the trail with this ice cold Powerade that had stayed cold because they had frozen it. Yeah, it was amazing. And so things like that. And then I also, I was raising money for the Brave Like Gabe Foundation, which was Gabe Grunewald, who's a professional track athlete who passed away from a rare cancer within the same year as my mom. And she had been in her early 30s. And she also, like my mom, just lived in this really beautiful, joyful, courageous way through cancer. And so my mom really connected with her story, and as did I. And I was raising money for that. And people, I raised like $34,000, I think, the course. Yeah, people just, again, I think we're just like so excited for something like good and positive and hopeful to plug into. And so, yeah, I was both, yeah, through it all, through the run, through grief, I felt very, very held by my community and friends, and they all showed up in really lots of different ways and really big ways and really powerful ways.
I think that also illustrates, like, a lot of people would say that running is an individual sport, but I think those of us, especially endurance running and trail running, I think those of us who participate in that, we know that it's really a team sport. And it may not be a team sport in the way that, like, you know, you're not all playing on a team for the same, I mean, you're working towards the same goal, but it's people who are feeding us, people who are supporting us, people who are training with us, even though we're the one that are, who is like going out and doing the thing.
Yeah, I 100% did not do it by myself. I did it. Yes. So supported by a lot of wonderful humans.
Can you talk a little bit more about how you settled? You talk about this in your book, but can you talk a little bit more on how you settled on this FKT effort when, as a way to honor your mom? Like, that was, I don't know that many people would come up with the same big hairy goal if they were given the opportunity to honor their a lost loved one in the same way. But I think it's an interesting process that you went through.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, I feel like I thought almost not at all about it. It just felt so obvious to me as what I wanted to do for my mom. Like I said, she was an extraordinary woman. In addition to running her first marathon the year that she turned 50, she did her first triathlon the year that she turned 60, and she had to learn how to swim to do her first triathlon at the age of 60. Yeah. She also went skydiving to celebrate her birthday that same year. And I've always loved that story about my mom. And then I went skydiving on the day that would have been her 70th birthday for the first time, and like sitting on the edge of that plane as there's like 100 mile an hour winds whipping around and like looking at the precipice of this 10,000 foot free fall and thinking about my 6-year-old mom doing the same. I just was like flooded with awe for the woman that Andrea Hanlon was. And then, like I said, she had cancer for 13 months, and the way that she lived through cancer was just truly extraordinary. She, you know, she felt all of the hard parts of cancer. She loved her life so much and was very afraid of dying and didn't want to lose us and leave us. She was 65 when she was diagnosed. She had just retired from her 42-year career as an elementary school teacher, and she was spending her retirement like going on like 70-mile bike rides and going to her favorite bakeries. And she read like 160 books her first year of retirement. So she just, and was like, she went to Glacier National Park to go whitewater rafting and run the half marathon. And she just was like, she was a woman who is just seizing the heck out of life. So when cancer threatened it, she felt how devastating that was. And she also refused to let that be the full story and continued to live with a lot of joy and live with a lot of love and strength. And so when she passed away, I felt extremely moved to do something in my mom's bold, brave, wholehearted spirit. And I knew that that thing had to be something bigger and scarier than I'd ever done before. And running across the state of Oregon and trying to do it faster than anyone else just immediately was that thing. And I think it also had to be something that felt really exciting and felt full of joy, and which felt like a very Andrea Hellman thing to hold on to as well. And like I said, Oregon is where I became a trail runner. And so to run across the entire state and tour all of its most stunning stretches of wilderness felt like a real celebration of the sport that has changed my life in such a powerful way. And so it was immediately like, that is what I'm going to do to celebrate my mom. And I think it was to choose to do a run, and my mom was how I became a runner, and running was always something that we shared, and that I describe it as like a love language between us. And so to be able, you know, when my mom passed away and when I was in that, like, how do I ever keep going? Like, how do I live in a world without my mom? And all I wanted was to feel close to my mom and to not like let her go, to be able to run for her. That felt like it was the most powerful way I felt like I could stay connected to her and hold on to my mom when all I wanted was to have her still in my life. So for a lot of reasons, it was, I know you said like a lot of people wouldn't think to do this when they lost a loved one. And to me, it just felt like the most obvious thing that I could do in the very confusing, disorienting phase of grief.
Do you think that being forced to put some sort of organization into this process, right? Like you had to actually plan for this and have organization. Do you think that that helped like focus your brain a little bit and maybe distract you from some of that overwhelming emotion? You said you feel your feelings, so that, you know, obviously you're going to feel your feelings, but I feel like a lot of times we want to just like pour ourselves into something that not necessarily takes away from feeling those feelings, but helps us have a focus in a time when things feel very chaotic and out of control. Do you think that planning that was part of that healing process more in the same way that actually accomplishing it was?
Maybe less so the planning, but I think that training for it gave me purpose.
Yeah.
And it gave me a reason to go out the door, and it gave me a reason to like get dressed, and like gave me a reason to get outside, gave me a reason to like to run and feel that connection to my mom. And it felt like it gave me, you know, something when it's like you're going through this thing that it's like hard to like, you know, brush your teeth some days. It felt like it gave me purpose through that, which I think was very helpful. And we talked about how like running is a place where I think I'm maybe closest to my feelings of all the places where I'm feeling my feelings. So I don't know if it like it really pulled me away or distracted me from my feelings, but I do think it gave me purpose and gave me a reason to keep putting one foot in front of the other, literally, and also just like in life, through a time when it's hard to do that.
Writing a book like To the Gorge requires a lot of vulnerability and a lot of introspection. Can you just share a little bit about how you approached telling this very personal story?
Yeah, it was really important to me to try to be as honest and as raw and as forthcoming with my grief as possible in this book, largely or at least in part due to what we talked about earlier with how we don't live in a society where we're really encouraged to be openly sharing our grief. And I felt like I was going to serve anyone who picked it up to read it in the strongest way possible if I could be really honest about my own grief. And so I worked really hard to, it was hard because I had to access like some really hard parts of grief and relive some very traumatic times in my life. And I did that in many different ways. I have a therapist who I worked with for a long time who was key to that and was a really critical resource who could help me feel safe and supported while revisiting some of those memories and putting them on the page. And I feel like I also kept my mom close through it, really felt that she was also supporting me through it, or and that she was a lot of why I was doing it. Yeah, it was a very intentional choice to write in the most vulnerable way that I could, because I felt like that was what was going to offer the most, especially to people who have known their own very deep grief.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm Martha Rosenstein, and I'm speaking with Emily Halnan, an endurance athlete and author who recently wrote a book about grieving the loss of her mother through an epic adventure in trail running. I did read your book. You so kindly provided me with a copy, and I really enjoyed it. I have also lost my mother. She died when she was 64. So also, you know, similar times of a, like an autoimmune illness. And I appreciated, I mean, everybody's experience of grief is different, but I thought that your representation was very accurate in just some of, you know, there's commonalities obviously amongst grief in general. But I thought I really appreciated your approach and just that like true, These are the feelings that I had, and this is how I worked through them, and this is what happened to me. Because I don't think that many people, it's sort of a taboo topic. It's not something that we really like talking about because it's hard. And I think that the more we talk about it, the more we normalize that it's a thing that happens to all of us eventually, and we are better for understanding how to work through it. And you can tell people that it's going to get better with time, but until you experience that yourself, you just truly don't know. But I did really appreciate your approach to sharing your story.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah, I think a thing you think about and talk about with writing is like the more specific you can be about your own experience, like the more universal you make it, even though that may seem counterintuitive in ways. And I think also that it, in a world where it is hard to talk about these hard things or to openly share them or go through them, I think when you experience another person being open about their experience, it gives you that permission that you need to feel these things that have been so hard to hold on to. And I hope and I believe that it's offered that to people who have read it too. And hopefully, like you said, like you maybe can't fully believe that things get better until you've lived it yourself, but I hope, like, I definitely talk about the hard parts of grief, but I hope it also offers encouragement to people about like how you keep going and that you can keep going and that like you will feel that bursting joy again, even if it feels impossible to believe in the moment.
Absolutely. How has running in some of these wild and remote places and writing about these experiences, how has that transform the way that you see the world and the way that you see yourself?
That's a great question. I mean, I think it's transformed so many things. Like, I just feel like my entire life is now shaped around wanting to do that as much as possible, because I think that I am the best human I can be when I spend my time running through wild spaces. And I think about like the last few summers I've gone and spent several weeks in the San Juan Mountains in southwestern Colorado and with my dog Dilly. And when we're there, we, you know, just like our everyday is going into the mountains and running and like being in this just stunning place. And I watch Dilly and it feels like he's like the happiest, most natural, like wildest version of himself. And I look at him and I'm like, you are me. Like we are both this way when we're in this place. And I think that running through the mountains and moving my body through wild spaces helps me, yeah, be the most natural, wildest, happiest, strongest version of myself. And I think realizing that has transformed me and transformed. I just think about like I used to live in a city and like wear pencil skirts and like,
yeah,
only see cement and how I, that version of me is not a very happy human who's able to both exist in the best way possible and also to like give the most to the world that I can. And so I think the choosing to make my life include a lot more of the wild Emily and Dilly roaming around the mountains is a pretty important thing to me.
I think we forget, I mean, you know, you are very lucky. I'm very lucky. I live in a place where the outdoors is very accessible and very mm-hmm. easy to get to. But I think we, even living in these places, sometimes I think we forget that we are animals, right? And nature impacts us. And when we remove ourselves from the passage of time, the passage of seasons, it becomes very hard to, we don't realize the impact that has on us until we go back and are like connected with that. And then we have this feeling that is so great. We're like, oh man, why does this feel so good? But it's because that's kind of where we belong.
Yeah, I think I especially feel that deeply having grown up in a place that was so immersed in the outdoors, surrounded by mountains and forests, and then moving to an urban environment for 4 years, and then moving to a place where, again, the outdoors is accessible. And when I look at who I was for the 4 years I lived in an urban environment, it does feel like it was like not the most natural, healthy version of myself that I really changed in a not so great way when I lived in a city. And I know people can live in a city and be happy, but for me, I think I have really appreciated that I cannot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes people who claim that they would never live anywhere else other than a city maybe haven't truly experienced the outdoors in the way that some of us have, and maybe they would change their minds if that was the case. So you have accomplished a lot, and I think that we really often get so caught up in what's next. So rather than asking you what's next, I'm going to ask you what is coming up for you that you're excited about.
It's good that you're not asking me what's next because I don't really know what's
That's
next.
Okay. That's okay.
I will say that in both writing and running, I have realized that I need some seasonality to my efforts. And I think in running, that's like a really natural part of the sport, that we do these big efforts and then we take a little off season or a break, let ourselves recover, and then we're ready to get back out there again. I think I have also realized with writing and with putting this big creative project out that I needed that same break, and maybe more so than I ever anticipated. And I know some people seem like they don't need that break. I'm in like this group of authors who debuted in the year 2024. And some people were just like immediately like, and now book two's done and I'm on book three. And I'm like, I can't even write like an email right now. How are you already done with another book? So I will say that a thing I'm excited about is that I feel like I'm finally emerging from the severe burnout I felt on the other side of publishing, because putting out a book is not like, the writing is huge and takes a lot out of you, and especially writing such a vulnerable piece, but also just the act of publishing and going through everything that's wrapped up in that, which there's all this stuff I didn't even know about that's part of publishing a book. Yeah. I definitely needed some downtime after that, and I'm starting to feel energized again, and I'm excited to be hungry to create and write again. And I don't know what that is. I don't know like what shape that will take, but I'm just excited to be feeling excited to get back into the practice and flow of writing. And then running similarly, I've did this run Hard Rock last summer, and I've kind of been training without purpose for a while, and now I'm getting excited about different things I could be training for, and I don't know exactly what that will be in the year 2025, but I'm moving toward more intentional running and writing. That both of those things feel fun.
That sounds great. I also understand the training without purpose and needing a direction to go into, and I am also planning things, which is exciting for me. So I feel that it's hard to pick the things.
Yeah, do you know what you're going to do in the next year?
I don't. I will probably do, I have a couple of options, probably like I have a couple of options for self-supported, like 50K-ish things. One here in South Central Alaska on what's called the Resurrection Trail. It's a 37-mile trail, and they do a race on it, but I don't want to do the race. I would rather just go run it by myself. And then I have a friend who lives in Whitehorse in the Yukon, and she put out that maybe she would want to do the Chilkoot Trail in a day, which I think is 31 miles. So those are the two things on my list.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
Do you have a short list of things?
I do. So I did not get into Hard Rock this year. It's a lottery system. And I've done it the last three summers, and I was very sad to get in, to not get in. But now I have this like open slate, which is fun in its own way to have to play with the space. And my short list is, I'm very 200 mile curious. And I don't know if that would be an organized 200 miler or a record attempt on something like the JMT, is a trail that has always like seemed very appealing to me. Or I also feel like this might be the year for another multi-day kind of, not a 200 mile would be multi-day as well, but like maybe something longer than 200 miles, and doing another like multi-day kind of long trail effort.
Do you feel like doing the FKT on the Pacific Crest Trail is like kind of just broken barriers that you're just like, okay, now what? Like all of these things are possible. I know that I can at least do it. What's next? Or is it still intimidating?
It's both.
Yeah.
Both. Yeah. I think it gave me a lot of confidence that, I mean, like I said, I felt like I was playing with Monopoly money. I felt a lot of imposter syndrome going after the record. Like the people who held it were athletes I had tremendous respect for, and in a lot of ways felt like I had absolutely no business competing with them. So to do it for sure gave me confidence and made me curious about what else I could do. And also like my body has felt what it's like to do that. It knows that it's hard. And I, you know, similarly, I think any effort that I would consider, I would probably face that same thing where I would be going after a time that the athletes, I would feel like, oh, I don't have any business, you know, the same story. But I think that's the fun thing about running is, and I think like I usually don't want to be chasing a goal that I'm like, oh, I can for sure do that. Like I want some element of like uncertainty and, want to be able to push myself to try and do it. And if I do it, that's great. And if I don't, then I'm still hopefully getting a lot out of it. So
If people are interested in learning more about you or your book, where can they find you?
You can find my book, To the Gorge, anywhere that books are sold. And you can find me on the internet, or on a trail around the Pacific Northwest, probably. But on the internet, I'm largely at Emily Sweats. On Instagram, I guess, is probably the most used social media platform these days. And then I also have a usually not super updated website at emilyhelman.com, and similarly have a Substack that maybe now that I'm feeling energy to write again, we'll start to see more activity.
Thank you so much for sharing your journey and your insights with us today, Emily. This has been really great.
Thank you so much, Martha.
That's all for today's show. Thank you to my guest, Emily Helman. You can find more information about our guests and this show on the Outdoor Explorer page at alaskapublic.org. Thank you to our producer, Tobin Shelby, and to Ammon Swenson for his additional support. And from all the hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, thank you for listening, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.
KSDP 830 AM Soundpoint.
K201DA 88.1 FM King Cove.
KOLD 91.9 FM Cold Bay.
KFPS 88.1 FM False Pass.
KKQA 88.1 FM Accutan, Alaska. KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitka to Castle Cape, small